Katrine Teeler, and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for Anthony Gormley's One Another project. The date today is the 9th of October 2009, and the time is 9:25 PM. Would you please give me your name, age, and where you're from?
Yeah, sure. My name's David James Meek-Smith. I'm 32 years of age, and I'm from Buckley in North Wales.
And how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm excited.
Did you come from North Wales today?
Yes, I travelled down by car as far as High Barnet, and then I got on the tube the rest of the way.
And did anyone else come with you?
Nobody at all. There was lots of people saying if they could, they would, but they couldn't. But they're going to be watching me on the internet back at home. So I know I've got the support, but it's not physically here.
And how did you find out about the project?
I've been a fan of Anthony Gormley's for a while, and my wife and I came to London in about April time, and there was lots of sort of adverts going around, especially around this area, concerning the One Another project. So it's always been in sort of my mind, and suddenly one day I just decided to go on the One Another website, and probably like a lot of people, just sort of clicked through and said, yeah, I'd like to sort of put my name forward to participate. And sure enough, well, not sure enough, but a few weeks later, shock and horror, a result came through and I was selected, which is absolutely amazing, really.
And how did you feel when you first found out?
Nervous, happy, probably just those two feelings, really, nervous and happy, really, more than anything else. To be part of something in the capital city on the fourth plinth, which is always, it's been in the news for God knows how long, because nobody knows what to put on it and nobody's got any money to put anything towards to go on there. Even from the critics' point of view, they've slated it because they don't see the point of it, but art is art. So I'm excited to be here, even if they're not excited.
And you said you're a fan of Gormley's work?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I live in North Wales, so I'm not far from Corby Beach, where there's the one and another place where there's all these the copper statues and that, which is absolutely, it's mesmerising, it really is. To stand there early in the morning, which my wife and I have been to several times, and we make a point of always going at 4 or 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning before anybody gets around. And then the true impact of it really, you know, it really hits you then. If you go sort of during the day, it becomes a bit of a sort of affair and that. But if you go early in the morning, you can truly appreciate what it's all about, and it's really exciting.
What is it about that another place that you like?
It can be a lot of things. It can be the solitude that it can make you feel. Because it's just you and copper statues that are there. Also, it can make you feel a part of a crowd, because there's lots of statues there that look like people. So it can make it sort of gives you the two sort of sides of the coin, both solitude and busyness, you know, sort of the business of life and that. Also, because it's in quite a busy shipping lane, there's also always boats going past and that. So it gives you a lot of emotions, which is really, really, you know, I found that quite profound. I found that good.
And why did you decide to take part in this project?
As I put on my profile on the internet, I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but everybody wants their 15 minutes of fame. I don't know, I can't even remember who it was now. Maybe Andy Warhol or something like that. Everyone wants their 15 minutes. And then I put, but in this case, it's going to be an hour, which, you know, 15 minutes times 4, you know, who can sort of turn that down? Even if you've got nothing to do on the plinth for an hour, just you've got to take it. You've got to at least be there. And my wife and I, we've got a child. Well, my wife's pregnant. She's due in the 4th of January. And it's something, you know, I want to be able to say, you know, I did that. And like in a few years' time, when our child's old enough to come to London, you know, to visit and things, I want to sort of point to the fourth plinth and say, I've been there, I stood on there. So that's why.
And is this your first that's on the way? Your first child?
It is, yes. Yes. We've been together nearly 9 years now. Without being crude, we've been trying really hard for a child for about 3 years. And finally, it happened. And we're now, 27 weeks pregnant, due on the 4th of January, and it really is exciting. And we don't know the sex either.
We said we
don't want to know. Although the sonographer did say it may show itself, and we said no, we just leave it a surprise. So we still don't know. Although we've got another scan next week, and again, we're going to say the same. We don't want to know the sex. We want to leave it a surprise. So it's great.
So how do you feel going to be a parent? How does that feel?
Scared? Proud? A lot of scared. But very, very, very excited. It's something that we've tried for so long. And it's like with a lot of relationships, it's sort of, it's next stage, isn't it? You buy a house, you get married, and then you have kids. So it's the next stage. It's sort of, I suppose, imparting my knowledge and my wife's knowledge and onto our children and, you know, ways of the world and things. So really, really excited, but nervous at the same time. I'm very happy.
And how long have you been with your wife?
April 2002, we got together. We worked together. We were both managers for Little Chef. So we came together that way. We were both sort of working the same job in the same restaurant. And, you know, like, what's that, 8-9 years ago now? So it's quite a few years ago now. So Little Chef's got a lot to answer for.
Are you still there now?
No. Crikey, that's the thing. That's how amazing life is. It changes so much. My wife and I, we actually left Little Chef probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago. My wife went back to university. She studied to be a teacher. She's now a teacher, as well as being pregnant. And I also left Little Chef, and I work for the Department of Work and Pensions at Job Centre Plus as... basically, my job title is a specialist decision maker. So if you were unemployed and you applied for unemployment benefit, I would sort of look at the evidence and make a decision whether you're entitled or not. So, you know, whether you got more money or less money and things like that. So that's my job.
And how has your job been during sort of this climate?
Very, very busy. And dare I say it, I'm a little bit smug because I know my job is very, very secure. I know that may be cruel, but, you know, in this sort of climate that everybody's losing their job, mine is secure because I'm getting busy. And also my wife as well, even though she's pregnant and she's working a few days a week, you're always going to need, there's always a need for teachers. You know, it's never an area of work that you're not going to need teachers. And likewise, for me, whilst the economy goes bad and people get unemployed, my workload increases, so that means my job security increases. And maybe that is cruel, but in a selfish world, then I'm okay. I apologise for that.
And why did you decide to quit together at Little Chef?
Oh, very poor pay. And the high up management did not have a clue. They didn't know how to run the business. And it no longer seemed like a good career path. When we first started, it was a really good career path where you could sort of eventually become a sort of an area manager or things like that. And over the years, that sort of ability to become an area manager sort of diminished. So it was no longer an exciting sort of place to work. So essentially the money. At the end of the day, cash kind of rules everything, really, to be honest. Unfortunate as it sounds, you do sort of go where the money is, really. And it was very tough when my wife left Little Chef because she went straight to university. So I was the only sort of fully employed person earning a wage. So that was quite tough. But I suppose it was worthwhile now because we sort of seen the benefits of it now because my wife's on a really good wage, I'm on a good wage. And even my wife now, she's going to be going on to maternity leave soon and she'll still be pulling in a good wage. So it was kind of, it was worthwhile living tough for a while because now we're sort of seeing the benefits.
What does your wife teach?
Primary school. 6 and 7 year olds. She tells me the year groups. That doesn't mean anything to me because I want to know the age of the kids. I don't want to know whether it's year 5 or 6. That doesn't mean anything to me. 6 and 7 year olds. And she does music and she does French. So she's like they're her specialist areas. And also she's really into English. She loves teaching English. You know about sort of like Shakespearean sort of things and Keats and things like that and Samuel Pepys. She really likes sort of traditional English type things. Always correcting my English. Telling me if it's borrow or lend and things like that. But no, I know it's terrible, isn't it? But there are sort of specialist areas that she really enjoys and she gets off on and that she enjoys.
And are you originally from North Wales?
Yeah, well, yes. My mother is, I suppose she's from, well, where I live in North Wales now is Buckley. My mother is from Buckley. My father is from Liverpool. And during the 70s, a lot of people from Liverpool sort of came over the water, or the Mersey, and they sort of settled in North Wales because there was more jobs and things like that. And bizarrely, even though I've never lived in Liverpool, I've got an accent because I was surrounded by my dad and my dad's family. So I've got a bit of a Scouse accent, but I've never lived there, so it's bizarre. So yes, I am originally from North Wales, but I sound like I'm a Scouser from Liverpool. Very odd. Whereas my wife is from Ross-on-Wye near Gloucester or Hereford. And my wife's got a very sort of neutral accent. You know, you really, unless you knew where she was from, you couldn't tell because it's the perfect telesales voice. You know, if you work on telephones, you just don't know where she's from at all. It's quite strange. but no, I'm from North Wales, but I sound like I'm from Liverpool.
How does that feel, living in North Wales with a Scouse accent?
It depends how far... If you're in North Wales and you're just on the border, that's fine, because everybody's like that. But if you go 10 miles further into Wales, then it gets a little bit dodgy. And you tend not to speak to people. You just sort of, if you're in a shop, you grab something and you pay without even saying a word, so they don't know where you're from. But if you're right on the border, that's fine, because everybody around that border area is, you know, they're normally from Liverpool anyway, so that's fine.
So why would you not want to speak to people? Why would you not want them to hear?
Oh, it's a regional thing, isn't it? You know, because it's like, you know, Londoners will say, oh God, he's from up north. You know, and the same with when you're in North Wales, oh, he's from over the water by the Wirral or by Liverpool. It's a regional thing, and it just, for some people, it may cause friction when you don't need it. So you may just sort of, a lot of your communication will be non-verbal. You will just, if you want to buy a newspaper, you will thrust it in front of their face and you'll pay for it and that'll be it, and you will walk. It's, well, unfortunately, that's just how it is. A regional thing.
And when you go to, have you been to Liverpool?
Oh yes, definitely, yeah. Almost weekly.
When you go there, do they think you're Scouse, or
they hear
something?
Oh yeah, no, definitely. They assume I'm one of them. You know, I don't know if that sounds wrong, but yeah, they'd assume that I'm one of them. Not a second glance. I'm accepted. No, also I'm a big Liverpool Football Club fan anyway, so you know it kind of goes one and one anyway. So yeah, definitely feel accepted straight away. It's bizarre. I'm not from there, but I do. When I go to Liverpool, I do feel at home. I really do. I really do like the place.
And did you spend a lot of time with your father's family? Yeah,
yeah.
Accent?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I could see that's certainly where I would get it from, you know. I've picked it up during my sort of informative years and that growing up. And definitely sort of discovered that, you know, that's the way you speak and that's how you feel, etc. So, you know, maybe two weekends in a month I would be up at Liverpool, you know, sort of in a really sort of hardcore Scouse area. So yeah, I can definitely see where my accents come from. It is a bit difficult to justify why I've got an accent when I've never lived there, but when I've been surrounded by it anyway, I can see where it's come from, yeah.
What's a hardcore Scouse area?
Toxteth. Anywhere by the waterfront. Anywhere by the waterfront. You know, even, yeah, definitely Toxteth. You can't... If you go to Toxteth, that really is, that's Liverpool through and through. It really is. And that's where you'll really get the hard Scouse accent, where if you're not from around there, you'll find it quite difficult to understand what they're saying. You really will. Even I do.
Going back to the plinth, what will you be doing on there this evening?
Well, quite boring really. No nakedness, no shouting or spouting or anything. Obviously, I've already said my wife is really into a sort of English language and things like that. So there's quite a few poems that she likes that I also like. So I'm going to read them. So, you know, it's sort of quite traditional sort of English poems, maybe some war poems from World War One, one Shakespeare poem, a Kipling poem, and some... I don't know how to say this. Many years ago, I was given a poetry book by... This actually ties in really bizarrely. By some Scouse students. And how do I say it? They were heavily into acid. I don't know how to say it. They're heavily into acid. And they wrote an entire book of poetry. And it is really quite... It's off the wall. But I've selected three poems out of this acid-induced poetry book that make me laugh, and I feel are acceptable to read upon the plinth. I can't believe I've just said that it's acid-induced. I really can't. But it is. You can't get away from it. You can't get away from it. So, like, my first four or five poems are, like, really quite traditional poems that, you know, sort of a lot of people will know. They'll mean something to me, my wife, and my family. And then the final three or four poems, they're all quite short. It's by these acid-induced students. And they wrote, I think the copyright on the back of the book is 1994. So, well, there you go. It's 15 years old. Crikey. I wonder if they're still alive. Who knows? So, yeah, there you go. So it'll be quite strange. You never know.
Where did you meet these students?
It was, well, as London has, you have the night bus. So, you know, and I'd been to a nightclub in Cream, in Liverpool called Cream. Everybody knows Cream at Nation. And it was like the early 90s when it was like the place to be. And if you got in, you felt special. You really did. And that was in my younger days. And we'd met up with these people in Cream, and we'd gone and had a good night and clubbing and everything. We came out about 2-3 o'clock, and we ended up, I was staying at some friend's house the other side of Liverpool, and they were on the same night bus, and they were just sitting on the back, and they had quite a few copies each. Obviously they'd been giving them out to people, and they'd give me a copy, and for some strange reason, out of all the possessions I've ever had for the last 15 years, it's the one thing that I've always kept, and it's stayed with me, and I've always been able to find, you know, I've lost books, I've lost passports, I've lost driving licenses and cash cards and wallets, but I've always had this poetry book for some odd reason, and I just felt that I had to sort of, well, on Thursday night I had to read it and think, what poems did I like out of it? There must have been some reason why I've still got it. So it's here in London. And that is really quite strange to think it was like, crikey, 14 years ago, that.
Yeah.
That really is quite strange.
What was it like on these night buses?
Hot, sweaty. It was good fun. I remember it being good fun. I remember all the windows being steamed up because we'd always be on the top deck and all the windows would be steamed up and everybody would be writing their name in the windows. And wherever you were going to would always seem to take forever for some reason. Even though you'd only be going to like the next village or wherever, it would literally be in the next stop. It always seemed to take forever. And very occasionally would there'd be like a police chaperone, you know, like one policeman on there with 40 people that were all drunk or out of their minds on something. It was always quite exciting. And the key was it was cheap because you never had to get a taxi. Like a taxi would be £5 or £6. And like, you know, that was a serious hole in your pocket. But 50 pence on a night bus, oh, great stuff. Great stuff. But very hot, very loud, and the windows were always steamed up, always. And there was always be some insulting remark written on the windows or something like that. Yeah, I did recall that, actually. That's quite funny, that. I'm glad you said that, because that has reminded me about all the things on the windows. And you'd always lean out of the window and say something to somebody that was walking along the street. Didn't matter what it was, you just say something offensive. Hopefully they weren't offended.
And also, just back to the plinth. What do you want to take away from this experience?
I want to feel a renewed sense of confidence within myself, because I am quite a confident person anyway, talking to people, but I just feel sometimes my self-confidence lets me down a little bit. So I want to be able to stand on the plinth, project my voice with my poetry and feel confident by that, and be able to take that same feeling away with me. You know, I'm trying to think back to like when I got married and I did my speech. It was a funny speech, but I had no confidence in delivering it because I wasn't used to standing up in a public environment. So I want at least be able to sort of overcome that hurdle, maybe. Doesn't sound much, maybe, I don't know. And essentially share some really good poetry, because my wife and I, we did sit up for a few hours last week and this week, and we read through lots and lots of poetry that we sort of really gave us a kick. And you know, there was a lot of what we call crap in there that we didn't like or wasn't quite right. So, and this is really, really nice poetry, and I hope that, you know, when I'm up there, I'm going to mention the person's name that wrote the poetry. So hopefully that will inspire somebody to sort of think, oh, I'll go and pick up a Burns, or I'm going to go and see some Shakespearean poetry and that, and hopefully make them go and have a look. So, because it is, you know, I like it anyway, and hopefully they will too.
Thank you very much.
It's all right, thank you.